Session number 14978, Charles Turnbull, Reel 23.
Mr. Turnbull, Reel 22. You were going to read, Mr. Turnbull, the actual message received in your company headquarters regarding the surrender of the Germans.
The message received was, which I will read out, and as I've previously said, that is the actual copy of that message. From Schaeff, via Brigade, 1, representative of the German High Command, signed the unconditional surrender of all German land, sea and air forces in Europe to the Allied Expeditionary Forces and the Soviet High Command at 0141 hours Central European Time, the 7th of May. Stop. Under which all forces will cease all active operations at 0001 hours, the 9th of May. Stop. Para 2. Effective immediately, all offensive operations by all Allied expeditionary forces will cease and troops remain in present positions. Those involved in occupation duties will continue. Stop. Due to difficulties in communication, there may be some delay in similar orders reaching enemy troops, so full defensive precautions will be taken. Stop. Para 3. Down to and including divisional tactical air combat and groups, base sections and equivalent, no release to be made to the press pending an announcement by the head of the three governments. Signed, Eisenhower. That was the complete message that was received at that time. And the next day, one could see representative of the German forces in the area at that time proceeding up the road with Colonel Mogg to be transported up to brigade headquarters. And these German officers passed through the positions of the 9th Battalion companies to complete negotiations, which was quite an historical thing to happen at that time. And I could say at that time one felt quite elated. And I was pleased, really, that I did think and say to Private Moses, give me that actual copy and I will keep that. And as Mr. Moses can see here, this copy is folded and brown with age as it was put at that time in the back of my army paperbook.
There would be great elation.
There was. That one thought now, right.
The news, that's it. The news spread pretty quickly throughout the battalion.
Well, it was transmitted around the area. And one realised that really, as it said there, that this was in the initial stage and that precautions still had to be maintained till the word was passed around. But to me, the dates on there and the times are the actual thing that happened.
What happened immediately after that? Were the Germans coming into you, surrendering, or were you going out to them? What occurred?
Nothing really happened at all. We weren't in contact with the individual German forces at all. All that happened was that we maintained those positions that we were in, and there was no contact with the German forces at all.
Do you recall whereabouts in Germany you were at that precise moment in time?
Can't remember the actual place.
How long did you stay there before you did start moving?
Well, this was in the getting on towards the middle of May, and before we actually moved from there, I think we were well into the June.
So you've literally stayed in that spot.
We were in a static position, and at that time, I think the feeling was one wondered why. Surely, the object was that really, could one could say, initially when we found that things were flowing quite freely, I think the attitude within the troops was Berlin or bust. And really, the feeling amongst the men was that we would like to be the first troops that would occupy Berlin. We knew that really, well, we had been fighting as a combined force, the Americans, the Russians, and after what had taken place from D-Day onwards, where this had all started, why could we not be there at the end and go forward as the victorious nation? But as it worked out eventually, we weren't the first troops into Berlin when we could have been. But as we found out later, before we were, the Russians were already there. And I think, really, we were a little disappointed about this. That we would have liked to have been the first entry to Berlin. Because as we found out later, well, the Russians had fought on the outskirts. But we could have been there before them.
You were not, you were standing there and you were still not involved
in what was going on
in the countryside around.
Nothing at all. There's no doubt about that. That really if the order had been given to advance with the formations that we had, which was quite speedy, we had the right organisation, and in my opinion it could have been done. And I think really, I mean, I don't know why, but if I'd been in charge of the British forces, whatever happened, I would have said, right, we'd had decisions to make before, whether it's, I know one has to abide by what politicians say, but really, the commander of the forces had had to fight the battle, and if he could end it in a victorious nature, right to the end, I would have said, right, get on with it, whatever happens in the future.
Was this the attitude of all the men and people around you that...
Well, men did wonder why we held here now, when this situation has been arrived at.
What did happen next when things started to occur? What did you do?
Well, nothing really happened, a lot apart from maintaining the units as they were till the order was given to move. And when we did move, well, there was no opposition. It was a straight run into Berlin.
So you went straight to Berlin from the position you were in now?
More or less. Can't remember staying anywhere for any definite period of time.
Much sign now that civilians are now, you have got a defeated nation and you would be passing through towns and villages with civilians. Sign of depression, animosity, whatever?
Can't remember saying a great deal about that. The main feeling was when we actually entered Berlin and found out what the situation was there. And if I could say so, the situation then was that really, after being occupied by the Russians, the German was pleased to see the British forces there.
Did they show that in some way?
Yes, I would say not by waving and showing flags, this sort of thing, but the attitude of the civilian was better because they had been quite atrocious behaviour by the Russian soldier. It had been very commonplace for them, for the Russian soldier. One had to remember, of course, when one expresses an opinion, what had been done by the German when they had gone into Russian territory, where it was quite commonplace for Russian soldiers to go into a German hospital and really approach a German nurse who was still attempting to look after, well, German people who were there in a sick condition, etc., and apprehend German nurses and take them away for not a healthy pursuit at all. And one could see the hands of the German female where cigarette stubs had been pushed into the hands, and really they had quite a lot to contend with the behaviour, or should we say the victorious Russian, where this was not really the attitude of the British soldier, this uncouth behaviour was not the type of behaviour adopted by the British soldier against the German. He was victorious, but that was the furthest thing from his mind, that he wouldn't conduct himself in such a manner as that.
You're part of the occupying force in the would be the British zone, presumably.
That's right.
Berlin. Montgomery did issue an order that there should be no fraternization. Do you recall this?
I can't remember that order being issued, but eventually there was fraternization. And I could say, really, personally, I didn't see anything against that. Right, we had been victorious, but let us say that really, right, this had been the Second World War, and really, we didn't want such things to happen again. And one had to feel, right, what would have been the conduct of the German soldier if they had invaded Britain? And how would they have treated the British population? So I think the feeling was, how should we conduct ourselves within the German capital? Should we attempt to set an example?
Were there suspicions at first? Obviously, you know, troops coming in, defeated civilians.
Well, one wondered what they certainly wondered what was going to happen, and the initial look around and seeing what they had had to contend with by the bombing, etc., that the Air Force had inflicted upon Berlin. Literally, the place was absolutely demolished. The civilian population were living in cellars, which was a good thing, really. That always lived in my memory, that really, probably in Britain, a cellar underneath a house could be a great advantage when this severe bombing had to take place. And when we entered Berlin to see civilians arising from the cellars and the living conditions that they had to endure, it was really hard, horrendous time.
So obviously not every home would have a cellar, so must have been living elsewhere than just cellars, or existing somewhere else.
That was my first impression. There seemed to be, in practically every street, initially where we went to, because we were billeted near to the Olympic Stadium,
in
the British
army
sector.
Were these German army billets that you were in?
Trying to remember exactly. Can't remember there being German billets.
You've mentioned the conditions in which the civilians were living under. What were the conditions regarding heating and lighting and food for the civilian population at this very initial stage?
Well, they were very bad.
Were you involved really in bringing supplies into them?
That really anything, we soon found out that really things like cigarettes and, you know, chocolate and things like that, well, that was non-existent. That really the food supply must have been, well, exhausted, really. And
did
I don't know how it really happened, but I think that we must have commenced to feed supplies in. The situation must have been, but anything that really we eventually, when the situation stabilised itself and we were mixing amongst the German population, anything that was given was well appreciated, any kindness that was shown at all in any way. And what lives in my mind was that really, when we start to move around, myself always being interested in sport, and as a young man playing a lot of tennis and football and that sort of thing, I went down to the German international tennis tournaments had been held, and there I came across a German who was quite old, in his 60s actually, and he had played in the Davis Cup competitions for Germany. And after chatting to him, he was willing to give me lessons with tennis. And I can remember going down to the courts and playing matches against him. And with his encouragement and know-how, that my capabilities as a tennis player improved tremendously. The little things like that live in my mind. And of course, one found out as well the army authorities were again organising entertainment. The nightclubs were starting to reopen, and the German Opera House, funnily, was still standing, and shows were put on there. And one that lives in my mind was a letter came round the company saying that tickets would be available for troops wishing to attend the Opera House and see the opera The Bartered Bride. Well, the lads, me still being the Sergeant Major, one couldn't get any response at all. Who wants to go and see opera? Anyhow, a friend of mine and myself decided to go. And I would say that that was one of the best things that I did whilst in Berlin. That the Berlin Opera House was filled to capacity. And funnily enough, mainly by the Russian soldier who seemed to appreciate and be brought up in the world of opera. And there were we in the Berlin Opera House, very few British there. And it always seemed to my memory, that little feature there. And one other thing, one had to remember now, that really, well, the atmosphere was, should we say, quite pleasant for the British soldier. The company commander at that time, and I can't remember how he came to be there, but it was Major Blackett. And of course I knew him by his Christian name, Rupert. And he always been interested in riding before his entry, I think, into the British Army, and whilst he was in the army as a pre-war soldier, he had that upbringing as a gentleman horse rider, and we commandeered some German cavalry horses, and he formed a riding school. And those that wished to join the riding school had lessons by him on how to correctly mount and dismount, riding round in a circle. Before he was allowed to leave the school, he had to be an accomplished rider. And he used to take us out, and we used to ride in the Grunewald Forest, which was pleasant for the men, and very, very enjoyable. So when one looked back, it was quite, if one could say, a happy time during that occupation.
Did cigarettes and chocolates become items of barter?
They did, really. One found out, if one could offer 50 cigarettes to anybody, well, one could get anything they wanted, really. Because the German, well, they'd been starved of such luxuries. And I would like to say that, really, as far as the men was concerned, was we had to, there again, commence to maintain discipline. Parades again were held. What lives in my mind is that really we had to do patrols around Berlin in the different sectors. There was the Russian sector, the American sector, and the British sector. And I think the curfew time, I think it was 11 o'clock. And no soldier of any of the occupying forces, he had to be in his right sector at that period of time.
But you could move across the sectors during the day. Is that what you're saying?
It was possible. But not after curfew time. And I can always remember taking a patrol out one night, went out in a company carrier, and we apprehended a Russian soldier in the British sector. And of course he had to be transported into the Russian sector, and he was taken to the Russian Commandantura at that time. And it became obvious that the discipline in the Russian army was really absolutely terrible. Nothing would have been done like what was done to that Russian by the or within the British forces. That he was taken into the Commandantura, and we had to take him in and explain why he'd been taken there. And literally he was kicked, pummeled personally by the Commandantura himself, apart from the people who were round about. And really not brought before the commander the next day to explain the reasons why, just that he had committed an offence which shouldn't have been. He shouldn't have been out of his sector.
You saw this happen?
Actually saw it happen. Different altogether to the British Army, where we'd have been put on a charge and brought before the company commander the next day. And this was literally the head of the Russian forces commanding that sector at that time. It was quite ferocious and really horrible to see. And my impressions were at that time, well, that's the first time I've been in the Russian sector and had to transport a Russian soldier there. And I can remember saying to myself, well, if I can avoid it, I think that will be the last time I want to see that happen.
You weren't in a position to protest at what was happening to him.
Oh, well, it had nothing to do with us.
Did you have any other contacts with the Russians themselves?
Well, we did see them around the city centre, and we went into buildings that had been occupied by the Russians. And really, how they conducted themselves, they had no idea of the correct hygiene or anything like that. It was really horrible to go into any buildings that they'd occupied. I mean, no idea on how to conduct themselves correctly, well, should we say, within a toilet. Whatever they'd had to do had been done anywhere within that building. That really, when one casts my mind back, it really makes you think, really, on one hand, how could they really appreciate, say, the world of ballet and opera, that be instilled into them, and yet, on a private nature, conduct themselves the other way. A different attitude altogether to the British soldier, where if he was given a billet, he did always attempt to keep that place clean and remember that really, that if he was living in anyone's home or anything like that, that was a place that belonged to somebody else, and he should treat it as you would expect a foreign soldier to probably treat his home if it was taken over.
Did you get to situations where you met the Russians on a social level?
Well, the only time I can remember mixing with them was when we went into the city centre, and they would be probably in when the nightclubs and that become to a stop, because you could remember we were there for quite a few months. that we did mix with them like that, but never very closely. We had to do guard duty when the head of the three powers met in Berlin. They had the headquarters there, and I think it was once a month when I think on one occasion Zhukov, Churchill and Eisenhower met there, and whoever was his term of duty at that time, sometimes it was the British forces that did the tour of duty, or the Americans or the Russians, and whoever at his term of duty, that force had to supply the guard. So there again, the situation came where drill parades, etc., were ahead. The guards had to be in good order and trained to perfection when these sort of duties had to be performed. Another thing I can remember quite vividly was, there again, sporting occasions came into the situation. And on one occasion, Zhukov, at one of the meetings, said to the British commander, "What about us having a football match? The Russian forces playing the British forces." Well, of course, this...